From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. Super excited about this one, my friends. First of all, I have Laura Alvarado. She is an entrepreneur. She helps gym owners to accelerate their business. She's the CEO of Gym Accelerator. But what we're going to talk about today, in addition to her business and how she wins, we're going to talk about something that I've held back on over the years. So we all know that I've got the Growth Factory and we're building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based upon this culture of love. And it's kind of our secret sauce. That Backyard Advantage is what helps our portfolio companies to win. It can help Sacramento win. And I've talked about that some on the show. And it's kind of like, that's what I do for a living. But as I was talking to Scott, my main man over here, about how to reframe our messaging, I decided to talk about the word advantage a little bit more. Some people nowadays call it a cheat code. That's kind of the current topic. What's your cheat code, man? What's your secret sauce? So today we're going to dive into that a little bit with Laura. And Laura and I, we happen to go to yoga together. That's how we met. And so I'm going to share a little bit about what I view as my cheat code, because everything I do in my life, I'm usually trying to tweak it so that I've got a little bit of an advantage. I've always been a little bit, under-talented, undersized, a little less ability. So what do you do to make up for that, to make sure that you're successful? So Laura, let's get to know you a little bit, and then we'll dive into your cheat code and because I have some ideas on what it might be, but maybe give us a little bit of background on you, just to get to know you, a little bit of your organization a little bit, but want to maybe take a minute just to get to know you.
Sure. So I started off with no business experience, just as a personal trainer, and I opened up my first gym, quote unquote, and it was quite possibly the world's worst business model. So I rented to trainers. They brought their clients and
sounds like a good business model.
No, it made no money. It was horrible.
Oh, shoot.
So my husband was working two jobs to support us, and I had a baby, and I was just thinking, man, we are going nowhere. Like, we're not going to be able to get ahead. I got to do something about this. So I started waking up at 3 a.m. before my baby got up and trying to figure out, how can I turn this thing around? And eventually I switched up my business model and was able to expand and open multiple locations, which was great. And then my husband and I really decided we wanted to get out of the Bay Area. That's where we were living. So I had to figure out, how can I continue to run these gyms and grow without being there? Mm-hmm. So we eventually moved up to Meadow Vista, which is where we live now. And I was able to grow the gyms and run them with visiting maybe once a quarter.
Nice.
So a lot of other people kept asking me, Laura, how are you doing this? How are you doing this? And I thought, I can make some money at this.
Ah, this is a business opportunity. If other people have a problem, you see a solution.
So it was actually after I had my second baby, she was maybe 2 weeks old, I went down in our basement and I filmed a course. I had no idea what I was doing, just kind of figured it out, and the business exploded. It was doing much higher revenue, growing twice as quickly as the gyms. So eventually I decided to sell them and just do consulting full time.
Okay, so this is really interesting. So you basically created a training course that helps other gym owners to win in their business. You're helping entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So like me, most people in the fitness industry, we come from a fitness background. So I knew a lot about how to get people in shape, but I didn't know a lot about leadership or sales or marketing. So those were things that I had to learn. And that's basically the same predicament that my clients are in. They're great at helping people and changing lives, but they are not so skilled at running a business.
You know, that's what I see too. We do investments. I've invested into 100 companies or so here locally. And it's super common, especially for a first-time entrepreneur, to really know their product, right? I really know how to help people get fit. But in terms of all the other aspects of running a business, that's new to them and they need to somehow bring that into their fold. So I'm going to take a minute and dive down that path in a minute because I think that could be really insightful. We could have a great discussion on like what's missing typically from that founder, that entrepreneur that maybe they need to strengthen up. But let's not go down that path because as I framed the beginning of our discussion today around the idea of creating an advantage, and then you said that I got up at 3 a.m. So you and I go to yoga. I leave for yoga at about 5:20 every morning. So I'm kind of consistent and leave for 5:20 a.m. But my advantage, and I want to get to know yours too, because it might align at some level. My advantage is what I call 3:15, the moment of truth. Because at 3:15 a.m, I roll out of bed and the truth of who I am going to be that day begins to unfold. So I spend the next hour and 45 minutes waking up and going into this mode of figuring out what my truth is. And for me, that's my cheat code. That gives me an advantage. What it does for me in many ways is it puts me in the right mindset to go out and win the morning, be my best at yoga. I'll go on about that. I could talk about it all day long, but you said you get up at 3:00 a.m. Was that once or is that like a regular thing?
No, I probably get up around 4:30.
Still really early.
Still early. Yes.
Okay. Is that part of your cheat code or your personal advantage? Give me a little bit of the overview of how you view your personal advantage. Obviously, you've been successful. What's kind of led to that? What kind of advantages have you sort of tapped into?
You know, I'm not the strongest person. I'm not the fastest. I'm definitely not the smartest person in the room. But one thing that I'm really good at is being uncomfortable for long periods of time. And I think that that's what's really contributed to my success, or when, you know, you see those other business owners and you're like, what do they have? And it's just willingness to be uncomfortable for a long period of time and also to change your outlook. You know, there's many mornings when I could wake up and say, I don't want to go out running, or I don't want to train. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's raining. I ate too much. I didn't eat enough. I didn't sleep enough, right? So instead, I try and frame myself to be grateful for the challenges that day presents rather than feeling sorry for myself or being upset. You know, and I definitely see that in small ways on my day-to-day life, but also in bigger ways, for example, like dealing with COVID. You know, there was a long time when I was angry about things that were happening to me and outside of my control from a business standpoint. And I realized I can be upset about it, or I can be grateful for the opportunity to show up as the leader that I always claimed to be.
So you like pain, it sounds like. You said you've gotten used to being uncomfortable. You're good at dealing with discomfort. Is that a fair statement?
I mean, I don't know if anyone really likes pain, okay, but I like to put myself in situations where I can exercise mental toughness.
Yeah. So you sort of embrace the suck, is what we say in CrossFit sometimes. You embrace the suck. Now, is that, so you live your life that way, but is there something that happens in the morning, something that happens throughout the day that allows you to sort of tap into that part of you, that badass part of you?
I always look at it as if I get the hardest part of my day over with, then I'm ready to show up for whatever the day may come.
Okay. So I want our audience to understand this, because this is somebody, Laura is somebody that has really stood out to me. So I go to yoga and I go to the same spot in my yoga class every time. It's kind of the right front corner. And you're behind me a couple spots. And you and I typically get there either the first one, or you're often the first one. And then sometimes I'm the first one as well, but we're there early, let's say. And occasionally pretty regularly when I go in. I show up and maybe I'm the second one there that day. Your mat is already laid out, like you're getting ready for yoga, but you're not there. Where are you? You're gone. You're not in the yoga studio with the rest of us schmuckatellis. You are out doing something. What are you doing?
Usually I'm at Placer Hills High School using the track.
Okay, so we're in downtown Auburn and Placer High School?
Yeah.
Yeah, Placer High School is probably like a 5-minute jog, I'd say, from where the studio is. So you run, you jog over or run over to Placer, and then you use the track in what way? You run around the track?
Yeah, I do track workouts usually in the morning first.
Oh, God. Now, what do those look like? Because it's dark too at this time, so you're attractive woman running in the dark in Auburn, and I shouldn't even say this on the air, huh? But you are running these workouts. You're by yourself, right?
Yeah, you know, but I actually love it. It feels like you're awake before the rest of the world. You know, you have this time to just kind of be with your own thoughts. The stress of the day, everybody else isn't there, and so it's kind of my time to just.
Is this sort of your, I'll call it your meditation time, or are you running interval sprints where you're like exhausted?
Both, usually the latter.
Oh, wow. So you're pushing it. You're not going for a slow jog for, you know, a period of time. You are on a program.
I'm on a program. Yes.
Oh my God. Okay. And then you show back up. Okay. So how long do you do that for? How long does it take?
Usually an hour, 45 minutes.
An hour, you go pretty hard for an hour to 45 minutes, and then you walk back or you jog back?
Jog back and hopefully run in before class starts.
Okay, yeah, so you roll in late. You don't really look all sweaty and everything. I never really know. I'm in my own zone at that point, though. And then you roll in. You're already warmed up, I guess, compared to the rest of... Well, I get there early and warm up, too. My motto is be ready, don't get ready, right? So that's sort of how I view... whether I'm going to CrossFit or whether I'm going to yoga, it's like, be ready, don't get ready. If you're getting ready at the same time as everybody else, then, you know, you're behind. So if you're not early, you're late type mentality. So now you roll in and you've been running, and then you're one of those people in yoga too that doesn't tap out, right? The yoga that we go to, my friends, is really hard. It's hot yoga, and we sometimes hold poses for very, very long periods of time, and people start dropping out of the pose, and, you know, I'll call it tapping out for lack of a better term. That sort of happens throughout the class. You don't tap out. After running and doing all this for I don't know how long, is this when you tap into the, I kind of like the pain part of Laura?
Yeah, I mean, it's that, again, I don't want to use the word I like being in pain. I mean, I feel like that makes me sound like, what's the word, you know?
A masochistic,
yes,
or something. Yeah.
Thank you. But no, it's just, yeah, challenge my mental toughness. Like, can I keep going when everything's screaming at me to stop?
Interesting. And so how long have you been doing yoga?
Just a year, actually. Okay. I just got an email with my 1-year anniversary.
Okay. So I've been doing it about 3 years, but I'm probably relatively new to it. You're very new to it, but you're really good at it. Were you good on the first day because you're an athlete, or did it take a while to develop these skills? Because behind me, there's a mirror in front of us, and so I can kind of see what you're doing, even though you're behind me a little bit. And one thing I noticed is, like, there's a move called dancer pose, and that's where, for our audience, that's where you stand on one leg, and you've got one leg behind you, kind of picked up behind your head, so you're holding that leg behind you with, like, one arm, and you got the other arm up. You look like one of these people in a ballerina in a jewelry box or something like that. And you have to have extreme flexibility to do it, but you've got to have good balance and strength and, you know, a variety of things. Most people can't do it like you can do it. How the heck do you do that?
Well, you picked a pose I'm good at.
1 year and you're already, like, I'm like, really? Are you kidding me?
I feel like one of the great things about yoga is that it is so challenging. You know, I've been doing it a year and I feel like I've barely mastered the basics. There's always little things I'm learning where I'm like, oh, that's how you're supposed to do it.
Me too. I've been doing it 3 years and I'm still learning the names of the maneuvers. But okay, so I've kind of tapped into what might be a part of your cheat code a little bit. So you have this workout in the morning and double workout. Is there a triple workout? What's the rest of the workout look like that sort of sets you up for the rest of your day?
Usually I'm done in the morning. I try and have a hard cutoff at whatever I do by 2 so I can be there with my kids. I've got 3 young kiddos.
Okay, so you work out hard and that's done by the end of the morning. And so is yoga the last part of it? So that's done about 8, what time they let us out there? 6 to 7:30. So you're done about 8 o'clock or something like that?
Yeah, luckily my office is close by, so I'm usually at my desk by 8.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're at the desk by 8 and then you're with the kids. So you go 8 to 2 pretty hard. Okay. Now, Tom, walk me through that a little bit in terms of like how the pain tolerance or love of pain, what does that look like in the business?
I mean, I think as an entrepreneur, part of what you have to do is do what needs to be done. And sometimes that's not always the funnest. I think it's really easy to get sidetracked by things that seem new and exciting. But in order to be successful, you've got to just do the boring, mundane work and get really good at it. Mm-hmm. And become obsessed with getting really good at one thing before moving to the next thing. So
obsession? You get obsessed? Is that... Okay. I say that facetiously. Yeah, I can see. So that sounds like a potential cheat code as well. The ability to sort of obsess and cut other things out of your life. Am I on track there?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think my whole life is very controlled. Who I spend my time with, what I spend my time doing, the information that I'm absorbing. I try and be really intentional about every aspect of my life so that I can show up for my team, for my clients, and for my family.
Yeah. So what do you digest or what puts you in that position to show up the way you want, whether it be at the track, at the gym, or excuse me, at yoga, or for your family? Is there a certain thing that kind of brings out that best in you? Because I mean, you got to be tired in the morning when you wake up. You know, you just come out for yoga. We're both tired, I can guarantee it. And then you got to show up at your best. What do you tap into something that helps you to be your best?
I find a lot of it is not getting distracted or not allowing yourself to be distracted. It's so easy now with, you know, social media and just every notification you've got, email and Slack and text messages, to just really stay focused on the priority. And also I set up a lot of negativity barriers. So
negativity barrier, you know, this is a new one for me.
The media, for example, I try very intentionally not to stick my head in the sand, but also not to watch a lot of news or media because
me too.
It gets you in a negative frame. People, there's a lot of people that I consider to be negative or get you think negatively or put you in a bad mood. So again, I try and be really intentional with who I spend my time with, the people that I'm surrounding myself with, or just little things that can put you in a negative mood. You know, for example, for me, it's when a client cancels. When you get a notification that a client wants to cancel, it's like a dagger to my heart.
Rejection.
Yes. So I'm intentional about when I check places where that could be there. Oh. For example, first thing in the morning, nothing good is on your phone. So if you roll out of bed and look at your phone, you're letting your phone and other people dictate your mood, your day, how you show up, or just putting things in place so that my team can handle those issues. And I'm only brought in when I need to know so that I'm not putting myself in that negative frame.
Yeah, I love that. So what time do you look at your phone for the first time in each day?
I try not to look at it until I'm ready to get to my desk, or you look at certain apps. I have one app that my team uses internally. Okay. And so I'll look at that first. And then I always set up my deep work for first thing when I get to my desk in the morning. And I try not to open anything else until I've completed my deep work task for the day.
Deep work. I don't do deep work. So what is that?
So those would be like my top 1 to 3 tasks that are going to drive my business forward that need the most amount of my attention and focus. For example, copywriting. If I try and do copywriting at noon, it's not going to work out so well.
Right. So you have an environment where you can eliminate distractions and do things that are going to take a lot of concentration.
Correct. And just knock those out of the way before you get into all of the other people and things calling for your attention.
I love it. So this is really interesting to me in terms of one of the things that I do, you know, I know you're a family person. You have 2 little children, right?
3, yes.
I'm sorry. So it's 3 children. You've got your husband. Is he still working the 2 jobs or is he part of the business now?
He is a full-time trophy husband.
Oh, wow. My wife never said that about me. But that's cool that you've got that. So he's helpful with the children, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. That's got to be a big part of what allows, I guess, any successful person to kind of get to that next level is to have the right trophies around them, if you will, have the right people around them that help support them. You mentioned your team, obviously your husband. Are there other people in your life that end up being part of that team, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely have people who support us on a personal level. We've got a girl who does a lot of stuff for our family and just also a lot of support from family and friends. Mm-hmm. I feel like we have such a great community up where we are.
One of the things that I do, you tell me so I'm one of these people that one part of my cheat code, I call it 3:15, the moment of truth, which is really, let's call it downtime, right? That's my time when everybody else is asleep. I'm in my gym at home, basically telling myself how great I'm going to be or whatever it is, getting myself, you ever get in those modes of like, I can run through a brick wall, I could do anything. You ever have those moments?
100%, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so they don't just happen the moment I roll out of bed every day. Sometimes I feel very inspired when I roll out of bed. Sometimes I'm very inspired throughout the day. But this 3:15 moment of truth time for me is when I do some soul searching. I think about what's really important to me, who I am willing to die for, what I am, you know, really passionate about. And I put myself in that mode that I'm so... It's like I'm ready to go run out on the football field and, you know, hit somebody. That's how I get or I attempt to get every morning when I leave the house. And what I have found over as an older guy, because I've been doing this, I haven't really talked, which is weird. I haven't really talked about this because I've been kind of embarrassed. Oh, gosh, I've got to practice harder than everybody else because, you know, I suck more than the average person. But it's worked, right? That repetitive 3:15 for whatever, about almost like 25 years now. It's there's a compounding effect that ends up happening by getting yourself in that right mindset every day for 25 years. And next thing you know, there's a compounding effect, and even somebody who might be a little bit less talented, have a few less natural gifts, they can still figure out a way to accomplish great things. And I'm working on some things that are sort of like fantastical in a way. But for me, they're kind of like these dreams that I chip away at, you know, over the course of a lifetime, if you will. So flipping it over to you in terms of like what inspires you, because I have to imagine some of this is about being inspired to accomplish. Maybe dive into that for you and for, you know, what you're trying to do in your life.
I mean, I think every entrepreneur has that drive to be successful. If you didn't, you wouldn't be an entrepreneur.
But some don't succeed and some really succeed.
Well, I think part of it is, you know, you are talking about how intentional you are. People will say things like, how are you so positive? How are you so grateful? How are you so driven? I wasn't born this way. I intentionally decide to be this way.
What triggered that decision?
Oh, I don't even really know how to answer that. I mean, I've always been a driven person. You know, if I set my mind to do something, there's nothing stopping me. I'm going to do it. But I think that also has you know, negative aspects to it as well, and positive aspects. It's led me to some great places in my life and also some not so great places. And, you know, part of it is never really being satisfied with where you are. I don't know if you ever feel that, but I'll achieve something and then it's like, well, I'm on to the next thing, or I could have done better, or I can do faster, or I can make more money, or, you know.
Well, you're very humble. That's what I've noticed. You, and even in yoga, you know, you're not somebody that, you're more quiet, let's put it that way. To me, you strike me as someone who's, you know, very, you've got great social skills, but you're quieter than average in terms of talking about your success and, you know, all the things that you are working on and achieving, when the rest of us are like, wow, look what she's doing. But you're very quiet about that, kind of a quiet humility. And even in the way you answered that question, that your obsessive nature, there's pros and cons. I got to ask, what's the bad? So why has it led to what's been bad?
I mean, part of it is just never being satisfied. Like I said, you know, I always feel like I'm off to the next thing.
What does that look like when you're not satisfied though? Does that look, you say it's negative, but does it put you in a really bad mood? Do you act out? Does that affect other people in your life?
No, I mean, I think it definitely affects my husband because sometimes we're doing things faster than he wants to do them. But I also think that's why we work out well. He kind of balances me out and brings me back
his wisdom,
to reality.
balances your insanity.
Yes, very much so. So I think just not really feeling satisfied or, you know, pushing myself too far. I've definitely hit points where I'm exhausted, and then again,
like overtraining type thing,
overworking. So, you know, that's actually something that I've personally really been struggling with at the moment. I intentionally took 2 years off after I had my last daughter. I knew she was going to be my last, to take some time to really be present with family. And so now I've made the decision to grow my business again. And I have this push and pull of, wow, this is growing, this is really exciting, but wow, this is really taking a lot more of my bandwidth. So where do I want to go? How much time do I want to spend here versus, you know, being with my children and being a present mom and, you know, being present for my husband and other aspects of my life?
Yeah. My daughter is a successful working mom, and I think she wrestles with some of those kind of questions too. So what's the answer? How do you, like, give us some advice? Like, you help entrepreneurs. What advice or words of wisdom might you give us around that?
For me, I'm just taking it one day at a time and seeing where things go. And again, just putting things intentionally into my day, like the hard stop at 2, you know, times where I'm unavailable to be present with my children. I don't feel like I need to be with them 24/7, but I do want to make sure that the time that I do spend with them, that I'm present and I'm not sucked into work or trying to do other things.
Do you feel guilty about being so committed to these things that don't directly involve your children?
I think every woman struggles with that. Yeah. Every mom struggles with that. It's definitely a challenge. And I think there's also more pressure from society. One of the things I was...
Yeah, guys don't really feel guilty about that.
Well, no, I'm kidding. It's true at some level because I went to my middle daughter's a birthday party. And everyone in the class was making a joke saying, oh, Laura, you're real. We don't see you. You don't do drop off. And I said, if I was a man, no one would say that. They would be like, the man's working. Of course he's not dropping the kids off. Of course he's not at the preschool stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think part of it is my own internal, but also part of it is just pressures of society.
Yeah.
I felt that a lot when I was starting my business. There was some people in my life, specifically my mother-in-law, who was very much like, why don't you want to just be with your babies? What's wrong with you? But to me, you know, I'm giving them a better life. And I'm also showing my children, you know, that you can create your dreams.
Mm-hmm. So what is the big dream? What is that vision? I talked about the fact that I have these fantastical type visions. And I think for me, those are like, they're to me, they're like my secret friends, right? They're like things I think about all the time, but you know, not everybody wants to hear about your BS, but they're real. Give us yours. What's the dreams you don't talk about that much? Or maybe you do talk about them.
Oh gosh. Again, I'm really struggling with where I want to go. I've always said I wanted to retire by the time I'm 45, but my husband's like, what will you do with yourself? You'll go crazy if you don't have something to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know the answer to that question, other than I know I'm capable of more and I'm curious to see where that'll take me.
Interesting. So what's the, it's impolite for me to ask you how long before that retirement date?
I'm going to be turning 40 this okay. year.
Oh, congratulations. Happy birthday. So that's big 40. That I feel like when you turn like 40, 50, 60, these are like milestone years where, you know, you sort of self-reflect. Like this year I'll be 61. It's like, okay, I don't even want to think about my birthday that much anymore. But when you turn 50 or 40, 50, 60, it's a time to sort of like reassess. Are you going through any of that reassessment? Is that part of the 45? I got 5 more good years or something like that. How does that work?
No, I mean, I feel actually really blessed. You know, I feel as though I've really created the life that I've wanted for myself. You know, I have a great family. I have a great business. My team is amazing. I love what I do. And I feel like I have a good balance of, you know, success, but also time with family. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of other people or my counterparts really struggle with missing out on, you know, family time. And I don't feel like I've missed out on too much.
One of the things that you do a lot of, you do endurance running too. So we talked about your workouts, but then you compete at some level too. Is that right?
I don't know if I would use the word compete.
Okay. What? Okay.
I used to be more competitive before I had children.
Well, I was eavesdropping. I try to be quiet most of the time too, but I listen and try to observe. And you were telling somebody that, I think it was you and your son swam like a mile or something like that. And your son's a little kid and you guys swam like really far together. Is that right?
We did a triathlon. So okay. He did a full like adult sprint triathlon, which I was very okay. proud of.
How
him.
Old is he?
He's only 8.
Okay. I remember he was like super young.
Yes.
And I'm like, what? Little kid swimming. How far is an adult triathlon swim?
I think the swim is about a quarter mile, but it was in the ocean in Santa Barbara. Oh. So it was an open water swim with a mass start of a bunch of people. So we're there swimming in the ocean.
Well, he sounds like he's a lot like you. Which one of the kids is most like you?
My son Dean okay. is definitely.
Is
yes.
he the oldest one?
He's the oldest.
So the 8-year-old has got this sort of ability to. That sounds painful to me, right? So if somebody that is, you know, maybe not used to swimming a quarter of a mile is going to feel some real fatigue partway through and you don't want to drown. Did he wear a life jacket?
No, we had wetsuits. Okay. And I had to help him a little bit yeah. towards the end.
Yeah.
But he definitely has that competitiveness and I don't know where he gets it from, but.
Okay. Okay. So I'm trying not to bounce around too much, but I'm really intrigued by the type of person that ends up being a super high achiever. And we talked about creating a cheat code and advantage. What's the advantage for your business? So you've built that for yourself, but when it comes to building a business, I think it's just as important, or it's very, very important. Building a business is extremely difficult. If you don't have a differentiation or a secret sauce or a signature move that can propel your company, it's a lot more difficult to survive and thrive. So in terms of your company and maybe what you do in helping other entrepreneurs, what are your thoughts about creating competitive advantage for you in business and for others that are working to, you know, be the next you or build something, you know, amazing?
I feel like for example, all my clients are entrepreneurs and I can very easily tell who's going to be successful and who isn't.
Really?
And it's hard to articulate, but again, it's that willingness to do what it takes, no matter how uncomfortable it is. You know, there will be people who come and they'll tell me, Laura, my business, we're in trouble. We're going to shut our doors. And I'm like, great, here's what you need to do. Here's your game plan. And then they come back with all the excuses about why they couldn't get it done. And like, that wouldn't even register to me. If I have to get up at 2 to get something done because that's what needs to happen for my business, I'm doing it. Like, there's not even a thought in my mind of let's not do this. It's let's do what needs to get done. And I think that that's really what separates successful people from the middle of the pack.
Mm-hmm. So excuses are a red flag. I love that. And I agree with that. I used to have a shirt that said no whining on it because, you know, we whined as little kids. My mom beat that out of us. And so I don't believe in whining. And my kids hopefully don't whine too much. We try to beat that out of them too at some level. So what other red flags are there besides whining, making excuses? You said you could easily tell.
Humility, I think, is one. Oh, you know, okay. Like, I think it's funny when you go to events, it's always, you can tell the most successful people in the room because they're the quietest. They're there observing others. They're taking it in. They're learning. And normally it's the least successful people in the room who are the first to offer advice on what they're quote unquote doing. So I think just understanding that there's more to learn and mm-hmm. you can always grow. And also just really a thirst for knowledge. You know, I'm sure you're the same way. I'm excited to learn new things or expand my skills or, you know, figure out something that I don't know about.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said that. I want to dive into both of that, those things, the thirst for knowledge. But first, the kind of like the, you got the talking part done, dude. Let's, you know, show me, right? So we all see these people that wear these shirts around that say relentless or toughness stops here or whatever it is that they're trying to tell the world about themselves. When you see that kind of thing, is that a flag to you? Like, okay, dude, you don't really need to be wearing I wore a Superman shirt to the gym the other day, and Andrea said something. it's not like I wear it all the time, but I did wear it. But when you see that kind of thing, is that a sign of an insecurity of somebody?
I don't know about a shirt, but just, again, I can see it in the interactions with my clients, the ones who are there to learn. They're, you know, grateful for the opportunity versus the ones who will tell you all the reasons why they have it right.
Mm-hmm. And the thirst for learning, I was telling Scott, another yoga teacher, he's been on the show a couple of times. He's kind of a guru in terms of mind and body and that kind of thing. And I was telling him that I've discovered that I really like making discoveries. And yoga has done that for me. I've discovered a lot about, you know, how to position the body and how to breathe and how to think differently and some things like that. But making the discoveries, I didn't really realize that I really like to learn that much. I didn't even know that about myself. But I guess if it's something you're interested in, you can sort of develop this thirst for trying to learn. And I feel like I've done that in certain areas of my life. But do you have a thirst for learning? And what does that look like in your clients?
I mean, definitely. I've always want to learn new things, especially if I have something that I have anxiety that I don't know about. Mm. That really drives me crazy. You know, I try and read at least 2 business books per month, and that's been really helpful for me to expand my knowledge. You know, I went to art school. I have a degree in painting and drawing, which really does not help me in business. And so I've pretty much been all self-taught in terms of having to learn skills that I didn't have.
Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of consumption of books myself. What are you reading, or what have you read that you think our audience might benefit from, or think I might benefit from?
Oh, goodness. Well, I just finished rereading Traction, and I know you've read that mm-hmm. because of EO, which was interesting because the first time I had read it, I had my gyms. And so I had written all of these notes in the book about how I was going to apply it. But it was interesting to reread it with the business I have now. And it was kind of a wake-up call for me to practice what I preach and maybe implement some of my own good advice. So that was really helpful. I'm trying to think what else I've read recently that has been, I've been reading a lot of tax books.
Tax.
How strategy.
To avoid tax.
One of my goals for the year is to just get my estate in order, and I just want to learn more about.
Is there probably no titles come to mind because they're not really, sometimes they're not page turners when it's about something like tax. Is there one that you're like, oh, this is the entrepreneur's guide for dealing with taxes?
Well, I have some short-term rentals, so I've been reading some books specifically on strategies for tax strategies for short-term rentals.
We need to catch up after class here, after this, because I've got some short-term rentals too. Scott and I and my daughter, Ashley, we have a pretty good handful of short-term rentals that we've taken. You know, it's more than a hobby now, right? So it's a thing, so... That'd be cool to talk to you more about that. One of the books, have you read the book Path of Least Resistance?
I have not read that.
Okay, so Scott recommended this book, Path of Least Resistance. And so for me, when I read a book, I'll typically read it a few times so that I can really take it in. And when Scott recommends a book, I take that seriously. And it's around... creating, this book is, I think it's made for me at some level because it's around creating the life that you want to, that you want to create. And instead of stopping from these things that you're doing, instead it's more like, well, why don't you create something? So spend our mind creating versus more stopping. And one of the interesting parts of that book is it talks about this thing called structural, I can't even say, I've just got done reading the thing. Basically, picture a rubber band, it's like, and the more, if the band is, one end of the band is, let's call it your vision or your dream, and the other end of the band is how far away you are from that being a reality, that everything in between, that the further away you pull that band, that's called structural tension. And the more tension on that band, the more, typically the more inspired you are to move toward that, you know, toward that vision. And so creating enough tension so that you don't break the band, but then also as you get momentum, right, the speed picks up as well. And so kind of using that, I guess, metaphor, if you will. But the whole book is around figuring out a way to create the life that you want to create. And it was written, like, I don't know, in the 60s or something like that, but it's been republished more recently. So for any of our listeners out there, I'm recommending Traction, good book. That's kind of like a how-to, that's more like an execution book. And this one's a little more execution in terms of deciding what you want and how to get there from a mindset standpoint. So so let's get back into your business now. You're building this business and you're growing it. What advice do you have in terms of, for entrepreneurs, what kinds of things are you're teaching people about marketing? You're teaching about leadership, other things. What's working in terms of making a difference for your clientele?
I think for any business, especially right now with people's consumption of content, is really finding your voice. Use your words, secret sauce. How are you different from everybody else? So even, you know, in the fitness industry, it used to be that maybe a few gyms were running, you know, social media ads. Maybe a couple gyms had a strong social media presence. But now every gym is, and they're all saying the same thing. Like, they all have personal trainer-led workouts. They all have accountability. They all have a great community. So how are you different? And I think that that's one thing that would help any business is finding their voice on how are you different from your competitors, and who do you serve, and what ways do you serve them, so that you can really not just fall into the background of this really crowded space of consumption of content.
Well, what are gyms doing you're talking about on social media specifically.
I think just in general, you know, like we have so many options, and you can find any option with the click of a button. Yeah. So...
I'm thinking, like, what would, if I've got my gym and you tell me, come up with your unique voice, and I look from within and go, well, I guess I am a Me Too type of gym. I am the same as, God, I don't know how different I am. So what happens then?
I think saying something different than everybody else. So maybe that's in who you serve. For example, one of my coaches who works for me has a gym that is LGBTQ friendly and also fat affirming. So we celebrate anybody, and everybody can be strong versus the typical gym, which is very focused on physique and body composition and looking a certain way. So that obviously calls out a very specific type of person who would want to work out there, versus if you think of your typical CrossFit gym, obviously that's going to be a very different experience. So you can think about it in terms of like the community you have and who you serve.
Yeah, I like that.
Or also just thinking about focusing more on the benefits, how you're going to impact somebody's life rather than how you're going to get the it done.
What about like the use of stories, like the before and after and some of that kind of thing? Is that because look, I've gone on and on about yoga because I think it's changed my life a lot in a real positive way. So I'm like a walking, I guess, billboard for East Wind Yoga at some point, at some level. But those stories can be really, people can identify a lot of times with, maybe not my story, but other people's stories. Some people are very relatable, and sharing those stories can help draw me in when I see that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think social proof is definitely helpful in terms of letting someone see that, hey, this worked for you. I'm like you, this could work for me. So there's like a sense of belief, and also just seeing this gym does have people like me. I think especially in the fitness industry, there's a fear of, will I be too out of shape? Is everyone going to be staring at me? What's going to happen to me when I go here? Are there going to be other people? Am I too old? Am I too young? You know, all of these different thoughts that people can have before choosing to get started. So, you know, really showing your avatar that, hey, people like you can be successful here.
I love it. So what's the biggest challenge besides, so it sounds like the marketing aspect of it, that has to do with revenue and sustainability and, you know, being able to stay in business and thrive. Besides the revenue piece and driving sales, if you will, what other areas are you seeing the most, that's working the best for you in terms of helping shape your clientele's success?
I think one of the things that all my clients need, yet they don't know they need, is really help with productivity. Because again, it's so easy to feel like you're working and you're busy all day because you're responding to the people and things that are calling for your attention, whether that's your inbox, whether that's your team, whether that's your clients, whether that's your family. We all have a million things that are asking for our attention. So really taking the time to decipher like what's urgent and what's important. Like just because it's important doesn't mean that it's urgent. What are the tasks that are going to drive my business forward, and what are the things that I can get to later or offload to somebody else? And then just really staying focused on, again, those big movers rather than feeling busy because you're responding to email in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Do you have certain exercises that you do with your clients? I'm thinking of the Covey book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and they've got the four quadrants about what's important and what's urgent and all that stuff. Do you use stuff like that to have people do sort of like a self-assessment, and then they can go through and help, eliminate the time wasters or the time sucks?
Yeah, so usually I have them identify their top three areas of their business that are their main revenue generators, and that's different depending on what level of business that you're in. So for me, mine is personal and team development, marketing. I still do all the marketing inside of my business, and then creating content for my clients that the coaches then fulfill. So identifying that and then figuring out how you're going to work on those tasks and make them a priority on a daily basis versus everything else that may come across your plate. The other tool that I think is really helpful is a parking lot. So as an entrepreneur, we get a lot of great ideas, and sometimes we can be really quick to act on them. I know I love to just dive right in, But if you put some ideas in a parking lot and then come back to them even a week later, suddenly they don't seem so great anymore.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And so that parking lot, so I use a thing called Evernote, and it's sort of a online note-taking tool, but there's file cabinets, and you know, it's easy. It's sort of easy to type stuff in if you got a good idea in the middle of the night. I don't do it in the middle of the night, but if you type something in real quick and then come back to it later and that kind of thing. Is there a certain tool that you utilize or that you suggest people use for, I guess, organizing this and the parking lot? And all that?
I mean, it doesn't have to be anything fancy. A Google Doc will do, okay. A note, whatever it is. So I don't know if you follow EOS, but for me, I have, you know, my priorities that I've already set.
You have your people, you run on EOS, and then you do your clients, you run on EOS as well?
Ideally, they would run on EOS, okay. But for some of them, that is a big ask.
And for our audience, EOS is the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and it's really a way to organize your business execution, and it's got regular meetings and priorities and goals. They call them rocks. So it's really a really easy thing to utilize if you are an entrepreneur. But it could work for any organization that's trying to, you know, go from point A to point B and just sort of organize your effort. So.
So I just put on the parking lot any great idea that comes across my plate that is, you know, I've already set my priorities and my rocks for the quarter.
Okay.
And I've broken that down into monthly and weekly to-dos. And so if something does not fall in line with those priorities, I put it onto the parking lot and then review it at the next quarterly planning.
And then you have a team, do you operate your EOS within your business with your team? So there's like meetings, level 10 meetings is what they call them. Do you run those in your
organization? With some of my team and some I don't. Okay. So a lot of my team are virtual and overseas. Okay. And then a lot of my team are part-time. Pretty much all of my team were previous clients that are more on a full-time basis. So they still run their own business and then work for me in some capacity.
All right. Very intriguing. Okay, so just for the sake of time, I want to switch topics, but it reminds me of the productivity question and, you know, the parking lot issue and how much you bite off, you know, a lot of us bite off more than what we can chew. You've got a podcast and you do it like almost every day or every day.
This key
sounds like a lot of work.
I batch it. So
you batch it.
I batch it. I film all the episodes. I film all 30 episodes in one day.
So there's 30 episodes in a month?
Well, yes, I just reduced it. So now that I do it Monday through Friday, so there's 20-ish.
Okay,
but
so you
for
release
the past
some,
year, I did 30.
You release these podcasts on the weekdays, but you record them all on one day, so they're shorter podcasts.
Correct. So they're 5 minutes or less.
Okay, and what's the name of the podcast?
It is called Gym Growth Daily.
Gym Growth Daily. And we can the rest of us find that, or is it private?
No, it's on Apple Podcast and, you know, all the main Spotify.
Gym Growth Daily. Go to Apple and subscribe or check it out. And what kinds of, you talk about growing in the gym, I guess.
Yeah. So I try and give one small actionable tip every day. So my idea was just to make it part of your routine. I feel like I have a lot of podcasts that I love, but I just don't have time to sit down and listen to a full hour. Mm-hmm. So I'm figuring, okay, you're driving from your house to the gym. You've got 5 minutes. Let's give someone one tip that they could take action on and implement to grow their business today.
How much of that is inspirational, or is it all sort of actionable type stuff?
It's a mix of both.
Okay. Because sometimes as entrepreneurs, it gets a little lonely and you need... You know, Laura's talking again, makes me feel comfortable. She says I can do it. I can imagine that being therapeutic at some level.
Yeah, I think I try and do a mix of that and then obviously more tacticals related topics.
Okay, so give me one that's, what's the one that's worked the best or one of the ones that has been effective?
One podcast?
One of the podcasts where you're like, that one really resonated with people and then we can send them there. Do you remember any?
Oh my goodness. It's like, I don't even know where to start. I have 300 now,
oh my
but
God. Yeah.
What topic has been,
is there a certain topic that people love?
You know, I find they really love the motivational stuff more than some of the, you know, more actionable.
And do you talk about the get comfortable being uncomfortable?
yeah, to just talk about things that are going on in my life as well.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Okay, so last question. What did I not ask you that I should have asked you, because I'm just treating this like a conversation, like you and I went out and got coffee after yoga one day. So, but what did I not ask you that you think would be great to know about you, or that would be really good for entrepreneurs to know about, you know, about growing their business or winning?
Just start, I think, is one of the things that's always served me the best in my life. You know, especially with some of the longer distance races that I've done, if you sit down and think about the enormity of it, you'll never get started. But if you just get going and focus on getting to the next aid station or the next milestone, then suddenly the miles will start chipping away. So
just start. Laura Alvarado, what a gem. What a great show. Thank you for joining me today, and thanks for sharing these words of wisdom, and appreciate the inspiration for, I think, for all of us entrepreneurs out here, just, you know, fighting a good fight. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you, we're never below you, always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.